Steve Khan Yunis. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor has warned Israel is wiping out Beit Lahia to initiate another wave of mass displacement. Group has called for immediate international action to protect civilians there. Death toll from Israeli genocide stands now at nearly 34,200 since October the 7th. And our correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir Abala to give us an update on the latest.
On the ground here, we can say that the Israeli occupation forces are still intensifying their attacks against several parts of Gaza Strip. Whereas here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against the eastern part of Al-Burj refugee camp. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes actually carried out several belts of fire against the same area, the eastern part of Al-Burj refugee camp. While when it comes to the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, it is still subjected to fierce and drastic attacks of the Israeli warplanes and the Israeli artillery shelling. As you know, that those continuous and repetitive attacks actually left hundreds of the Palestinian horizontal buildings completely destroyed on the ground. While when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the number and the toll of the Palestinian corpses extracted from the massive graves in the Nasser Medical Complex actually has risen to roughly 310 Palestinian dead bodies. And according to the estimates of the Gaza civil defense crews, that hundreds of the Palestinian civilians are still missing and trapped under the rubble and buried in such massive graves inside the city. While when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, the current situation is still hyper-hazardous as the Israeli occupation forces actually vow to re-attack the Beit Lahia city. As you know, that they are demanding thousands of the Palestinian civilians to evacuate the entire city of Beit Lahia.
Head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has called for a probe into Israeli killings of UN workers during regime's campaign of genocide. Philippe Lazzarini, speaking at a UN press briefing, said since October, nearly 200 UNRWA members have been killed and about 160 premises belonging to UNRWA damaged or destroyed by the Israelis. He called for accountability for what he described as blatant disregard for UN. Lazzarini made the remarks today after an independent report showed Israel has not provided any evidence to back its claim that some UNRWA members had ties to the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and Hamas's October 7th operation. Claims by Israel led to massive budget deficit as a number of countries that donated to the agency cut off their funding. Lazzarini expressed hope that donors will resume their much-needed contributions. Spokesman for the Hamas military wing says the Israeli regime has achieved nothing but murder and destruction in its 200 days of onslaught on Gaza. In a video statement, Abu Ubaidah said the Israeli enemy is in a quagmire stuck in the sands of Gaza. He said the regime still trying to restore its image in Gaza, but will reap nothing but shame and defeat. He said resistance in Gaza is as solid as the mountains of Palestine and vowed that resistance will continue its strikes as long as aggression against Palestine persists. He also hailed Iran's recent operation against Israel, saying the massive attack established new rules and disrupted the regime's calculations.
It happened on April 1st. The madness that resulted in a change to equation of power in West Asia.
We are tracking breaking news out of the Middle East, an attack on Iran's consulate building in Syria.
As crazy as it sounds, but apparently not crazy enough for the Israeli regime that violated the sanctity of Iranian diplomatic premises by carrying out the attack. The strike left 7 Iranian military advisors martyred, including 2 senior commanders of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. It was condemned by heads of state, politicians and resistance groups as a violation of the UN Charter and Vienna Conventions. Nevertheless, the United Nations Security Council failed to adopt measures in order to punish Israel for this crime. Following the UNSC's inaction and passivity, Iran had to take the matter into its own hands and punish Israel as asserted by Iran's leader. The promise of retaliation kept Israel on edge for almost 2 weeks before being fulfilled on April 13. Up Operation True Promise was the codename. Iran fired a barrage of more than 300 missiles and drones from its soil at targets within the 1948 occupied territories. The retaliation by Iran was described as the biggest drone attack in history. It was widely welcomed and applauded, with people taking to the streets in celebration. Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank also posted online videos of their celebrations and images of the extraordinary projectiles fired towards the occupying regime.
Ya Allah! Ya Allah! Allah!
Allahu Akbar!
Ya Hussein!
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Ya Allah!
Allahu
Akbar!
Allah!
Nizal! Darabuha!
Allahu Akbar!
Wislu!
More than 10 allied countries rushed to help Israel with their full defense capacity in the region. This, of course, included the U.S., that brought in three of its unified combatant commands, European Command, Central Command, and the Space Command, with the Ramstein Air Base in Germany operating as the command center. The U.S. also deployed a missile interceptor system never used before, the SM-3 Ballistic Missile Interceptor, two American warships in the Mediterranean Sea used it for the first time to intercept Iranian missiles. Yet all these efforts did not seem to bear the expected fruit. Israel's most important military base, the Nevatim Air Base, and Mount Hermon military intelligence site were successfully hit. That means the entire defense capabilities of Israel and those of its allies failed to protect the targets in the occupied lands from Iranian missiles, even though Iran did not employ the full capacity of its drones and missiles. The damage was done, but that was seemingly too much for Israel and its allies to admit.
The Israeli government says it shot down 99% of drones and missiles.
The new assignment for the Israeli allied media was creating a fake image of victory for Israel by downplaying the impact of Iran's missiles, something considered by Tehran as a secondary issue. The rules of engagement were changed, and the equation of power in West Asia shifted in favor of Iran and the axis of resistance.
Pro-Palestine sentiment is rocking the U.S. Hundreds of protesters have closed down Brooklyn Street in New York, where U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer resides. Protesters urged Schumer to put an end to U.S. military and financial support for the Israeli regime amid its ongoing genocide in Gaza. Police forces made several arrests. Anti-war fever has also spread across most prestigious universities in the U.S. The New York University campus clamped down on students resulted in over 133 arrests. In Massachusetts, gates to Harvard Yard were closed to the public in an attempt to head off demonstrations there, and students at MIT called on authorities to divest finances from manufacturers that sell weapons to Israel. Michigan, Minnesota, and Columbia universities have also been scenes of anti-war and anti-Israeli protests. Canadian city of Calgary witnesses a police clampdown on pro-Palestinian rallies held in protests at Israeli genocide in Gaza. Key organizer of those frequent protests, named Wissam Khalid, has been arrested several times by Canadian police. Our correspondent, Robert Inlakesh, has your details out of Calgary.
Since the beginning of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, Justice for Palestinians in the city of Calgary have organized weekly demonstrations, during which organizers and protesters say they have fallen victim to unfair repression from the Canadian authorities. Wissam Khalid, a leader in the local pro-Palestinian movement, described the environment in which protesters take action.
Well, we've been dealing with a lot of repression from the Calgary police ever since basically those first weeks in October. On November 5th, I was arrested for chanting "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." Arrested and charged for that with a hate crime. They called it disturbing the peace for making what they called an anti-Semitic chant in public, an offensive anti-Semitic chant.
In an incident that went viral on social media, Wissam was recently arrested again by the Canadian police, but it isn't he alone who has been subjected to such ill treatment.
On November 19th, a couple weeks after my first arrest, there was a small group of protesters after one of our marches that sort of went and occupied an intersection up by McLeod Trail and 4th Avenue there. Stayed there for, I wasn't on site, but I heard it was about 5-10 minutes that they were there, and then the police basically came in, you know, to bash heads, and they actually did quite a lot of damage to people. They assaulted a 13-year-old boy, put him in hospital. He spent that night in hospital with concussion symptoms.
All this repression for what Wissam says are simple demands that are not causing harm to the public and do not warrant such measures by the police.
Well, we're supposed to have the right to free speech and freedom of assembly and the right to protest in this country. And frankly, on this issue, you know, especially here in Calgary, that right really feels like it's been under attack from the police, from the city, from the justice ministry here when they decided to charge me. Especially on this issue, I mean, it's not like we're out here for nothing. We're talking about a genocide that's ongoing.
As pro-Palestinian demonstrators take to the streets across North America, they experience similar backlash over the phrase, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. In Calgary, there is no difference. Crackdowns from the police and even attempts to make the phrase itself illegal have been made. Yet, they say this does not discourage them from their actions in solidarity with the Palestinian people. Robert N. Lakesh, Calgary.
The Iranian president once again warns Israel against any attack on his country's territory. Ibrahim Raisi said the circumstances will completely change and there might be nothing left of the regime following such aggression. He made the remarks in the Pakistani city of Lahore during an official visit. He was referring to Israel's threats to target Iran following Tehran's recent retaliatory operation that hit the regime's military bases. Raisi said that Iran punished Israel for the deadly attack on its embassy in Damascus, which was a complete violation of international law.
During the second day of his official visit, the Iranian president displayed a keen focus on strengthening cultural bonds with Pakistan. Traveling to Lahore, a city with rich cultural heritage, President Raisi was warmly welcomed upon his arrival by the Chief Minister of Punjab, Mariam Nawaz. He paid homage at the mausoleum of the revered Urdu and Persian poet Allama Muhammad Iqbal. Iqbal is held high esteem in Iran for his poetic works in the Persian language and is lovingly called Iqbal-e-Lahori by the Iranians. President Raisi emphasized that there was no sense of foreignness in Pakistan, underlining the deep historical and cultural connections between the two nations. President Raisi offered special prayers for the oppressed people of Gaza and lauded the Pakistani nation for its unwavering unity in championing the rights of oppressed people of Palestine. Meanwhile, the president paid a visit to the renowned University of Lahore and delivered a speech. In his address, President Raisi emphasized the deep historical, religious, cultural, and civilizational bonds between Pakistan and Iran. Raisi also said the common point of view of the people of Iran and Pakistan is the defense of the oppressed Palestinian nation. He asserted that the Islamic Republic will continue to defend the resistance and oppressed nation of Palestine with pride. President Raisi also warned that if Israel makes a mistake and attacks Iran's territory, it is clear that nothing will be left of the Israeli regime. Later, during consecutive meetings with the Chief Minister and Governor of Punjab, the Iranian president reassured Pakistani authorities of Tehran's commitment to collaborating in bolstering cultural and trade relations between the two nations.
President Raisi has devoted his second day of Pakistan visit to exploring the country's rich cultural heritage. Many believe that the Iranian president's trip will significantly contribute to boosting the bilateral trade and strengthening cultural relations between the two nations. Nasir Kazmi, Lahore.
Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has visited the Sri Lankan capital Colombo as part of his regional tour. He attended an inaugural ceremony of mega multi-purpose development project, which was constructed by Iranian experts amid U.S. sanctions. Fatima Masumi has your story.
Iran and Sri Lanka are set to bolster bilateral ties in all areas, in particular in the field of energy. A mega multi-purpose project named Umoja, which consists of two dams and a power plant with 120 megawatts hydropower generation capacity, has been designed and constructed by Iranian experts in Sri Lanka. The $530 million project was originally scheduled to be completed in 2015, but was suspended several times due to U.S. sanctions on Iran and several other issues. Construction for Umoja began in 2008 when top government officials from Sri Lanka and Iran gave the green light for the start of the $530 million project. Iranian company Farab has executed the highly complicated project, which includes two dams with 35 and 50 meters of height, a 15.5-kilometer-long irrigation tunnel, and a 630-meter shaft, which transfers water to a power plant that has a capacity of producing 120 megawatts of electricity.
Sri Lanka requested us to help them in the mining industry, food industry, and engineering and technical products in power plants. The country is moving towards new sustainable energies, and thus they have asked us and our engineers to help us with the construction of wind and water power plants.
Iranian companies offering technical and engineering services have already found their way into major regional and international markets. This has happened mainly thanks to the government's efforts to diversify the oil-dependent economy and use exports of such services as a major source of foreign currency income at the time of increased American sanctions. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
The Democratic People's Republic of Korea says it will continue to build the most powerful military to safeguard the country's sovereignty, security, and regional peace. The comment was made by DPRK leader's sister, Kim Yo-jong, also warned the joint live fire drills by the U.S. and South Korea are driving regional security environment into a dangerous turmoil. Pyongyang on Tuesday carried out its first nuclear counterattack drills to simulate its nuclear trigger management system. During that drill, the country fired several short-range ballistic missiles toward the sea off its eastern coast. Drill comes as Washington's enhancing its military alliance with South Korea and Japan. Pyongyang considers increased the U.S. military footprint in the region as a threat to its national security.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Human Rights Council adopted a resolution calling on Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Gaza Strip. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Hours after US President Joe Biden told Israel to take concrete steps to protect civilians and aid workers in Gaza or risk losing military support from the United States, top members of President's Democratic Party ramped up pressure on the White House to go further. The progressive Senator Bernie Sanders was among the strongest voices. Bernie Sanders said Israel should not be getting another nickel in military aid until it markedly facilitates the flow of provisions into a region that the U.S. suspects is already grappling with famine. Bernie Sanders told CNN on Thursday, 4th of April, "We're looking at one of the worst humanitarian disasters that we have seen in a very, very long time because Israel is not allowing humanitarian trucks into Gaza, and especially into the areas where people are in most desperate condition." Sanders added it was not the US's job to worry about how Gaza may tie into the political future of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Vermont senator added, "My view is no more military aid to Israel when children are starving in Gaza." Meanwhile, the Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland insisted that President Biden enforce a national security memorandum signed in February that aimed to condition the transfer of military weaponry to Israel on its adherence to humanitarian benchmarks. Senator Van Hollen said topping the list of policies that President Biden could leverage against Israel is the suspension of transferring offensive weapons to the occupied Palestinian territories if it fails at reducing civilian harm or getting desperately needed assistance to people in need. Democratic Senator Van Hollen alluded to the policy days after Israeli airstrikes assassinated seven employees of the international food charity World Central Kitchen. Following the attack, a cargo ship carrying 240 tons of food destined for Gaza returned to Cyprus. The Democratic senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, said she would seek to impede the sale of F-15s to the occupied Palestinian territories after the assassination of the World Central Kitchen staffers, which included a U.S.-Canadian citizen and three British nationals. A day before the World Central Kitchen workers were massacred, a report surfaced that the Biden administration was mulling an $18 billion arms transfer package to Israel that would include more than two dozen F-15 fighter jets. Democratic Senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, told CNN, "We cannot approve the sale of arms to a regime that is in violation of our own laws on this, and that includes access to humanitarian relief. This is a moral question. It is also a legal question. Congress has responsibility here, and I'm willing to take that responsibility." Bernie Sanders, Senators Van Hollen and Warren are all part of a 51-49 majority that Democrats and independents who caucus with them hold in the U.S. Senate. President Biden and his administration have generally stood in steadfast support of Israel, which has struck Gaza on land and by air after the 7th of October surprise operation by Hamas. But with the martyrdom toll in Gaza climbing above 30,000 and the humanitarian crisis worsening, the United States, which provides Israel with at least $3.8 billion in security assistance annually, recently abstained from a United Nations vote, which resulted in a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. President Biden on Thursday, 4th of April, for the first time called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza as well. The website Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. World Central Kitchen has rejected as lacking credibility the findings of an Israeli investigation led by a former general into a coordinated series of Israeli drone strikes on the charity's vehicles in Gaza recently that assassinated seven aid workers. As the Israeli occupation forces blamed a series of grave errors for the deadly attack that assassinated three British nationals, three other foreign nationals, and a Palestinian colleague while delivering food, World Central Kitchen renewed its call for a full and independent inquiry into the incident. Amid mounting international pressure on the Israeli regime, the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron said the findings of the Israeli inquiry, which he said the UK was reviewing carefully, showed that major reform was required. David Cameron said on X social media platform, "It's clear major reform of Israel's deconfliction mechanism is badly needed to ensure the safety of aid workers." The hurriedly completed inquiry, which led to two middle-ranking officers being dismissed and a general reprimanded in the Israeli army, outlined a catalogue of failings by Israeli forces in an attack that has reinforced global criticism of Israel's conduct of a war in which more than 33,000 Palestinians have been massacred in the past 6 months. While welcoming the report as a first step, the founder of World Central Kitchen, the celebrity chef Jose Andres, said the Israeli military cannot credibly investigate its own failure in Gaza. It's not enough to simply try to avoid further humanitarian deaths, which have now approached close to 200. All civilians need to be protected and all innocent people in Gaza need to be fed and safe, and all captives must be released. The charity's chief executive, Erin Gore, said, "Their apologies for the outrageous massacring of our colleagues represent cold comfort. It's cold comfort for the victims' families and World Central Kitchen's global family. Israel needs to take concrete steps to assure the safety of humanitarian aid workers. Our operations remain suspended in Gaza." World Central Kitchen's remarks were echoed by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who said fixing failings in Israel's military procedures required independent investigations and meaningful and measurable changes on the ground, noting that 196 humanitarian aid workers have been assassinated during Israel's brutal assault on Gaza. Antonio Guterres said, "We want to know why." The announcement of punishments and the apology have not calmed the international outcry over the World Central Kitchen workers' deaths or reassured international aid groups that it is safe to resume operations in Gaza, where nearly a third of the population is on the brink of starvation. Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. The United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution calling for Israel to be held accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in the Gaza Strip. The resolution came as Israel finally succumbed to unprecedented U.S. pressure and open new food corridors into Gaza. The vote by the United Nations Human Rights Council, a body that Israel reviles, marks another moment in the slow global ostracization of Israel over its war in Gaza, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians. 28 countries voted in favor, 13 countries abstained from the vote, and 6 voted against the resolution, including the United States and Germany. The resolution emphasized the need to ensure accountability for all violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law in order to end impunity. It also expressed grave concern at reports of serious human rights violations and grave breaches of international humanitarian law, including of possible war crimes and crimes against humanity in the occupied Palestinian territories. The resolution follows what appears to have been a decisive phone call between Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu on Thursday, 4th of April, in which Joe Biden warned U.S. policy towards Gaza would change if Israel continued to defy calls to alter its approach to the supply of aid to the population of Gaza.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Ali and Sayyid Abdullah Musawi. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So this series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with an analysis on the important points addressed by the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And in this new series, we are concerned with the topic humans or human beings in the speeches of the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran. For today, we want to talk about an important topic, and that is the difference, or it's better to say the comparison, as it is between the Western democracy and the Islamic one, as the term that is coined as Mardum Salariye Dini. You know, when we talk about democracy in the Western world, the first thing that comes to our mind is the secular political system.
Mm-hmm.
But when we are talking about Islam, this human dignity, you know, has come to the scene. But the case is that now where is the place of rationality in the, we can say, Islamic system or the system of values? So when we, from one side, if you are going to pay attention to obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with his own system of values. But from the other side, you have these human beings in the 21st century with his system of value and rationality at the top. So what are we going to do with the concept of rationality over here?
Yeah. So I think it's pure rationality that we see in the philosophy that Islam has actually defined for itself. Look, Islam says the values are absolute, not relative.
Okay.
It means that if something is bad, so it is bad forever.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is good, it is good, and it has to be praised and respected. But in the other schools, as I said earlier, they just look at a social aspect of it. They say, for example, this might be bad in a society, committing such an action might be bad in a society, but as for me, as a person, I practice it. It's because I'm free.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, this is the difference. When you have no limitation for you, but we have these limitations defined by whom? By the Creator.
Okay.
Let me give you an example. When a car actually is going to be given from a company to a person who has recently bought it, what happens? The car actually has been tuned based on some orders and some formulas and. So you cannot say that I can take this car everywhere.
So different parts are assembled by the factory and given to you as a car.
So the vehicle cannot be used in any way you like. The person
That's right.
who made this car knows how to actually put the parts together, right?
Yes.
The Kaisal has no idea of what has been actually. So
you as a driver has no idea what's happening mechanically speaking inside the car. Okay.
So the one who has created you actually gave you a formula for your life, and he knows how to live very actually very well in this world. So he is the creator. He knows. He as the person who made this person.
So now the question would be that, so this ideal system that you are talking about, Islamically speaking, might be practiced well at the time of its true practitioners. I mean, prophets and the infallible imams. But what about now?
So
I mean, the value system that you say can govern the people and has a system of values for the people in order to give them their roles and rights in the society must be, in a better sense, be practiced by its true practitioners. I mean, at the time of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible imams. So look, what about now? Because the type of...
Islam as a program has not been actually revealed for a certain period of time.
It has
been revealed for the whole mankind for in the course of history till the end of the day.
This is true. The value system is the same. But you know, extracting the new rules from that and adapting.
So even Islam is open in this sense. Okay. Look, up until the time of, for example, imams, those who were present. So they were the real interpreters of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of the Qayba and occultation of Imam alayhi salam, there is the solution of ijtihad is open, and the ijtihad is something which is dynamic, and it is available every time. So those who are ruwat al hadith, those who are interpreters of hadith from the language of Ahlul Bayt, those who we are calling them general deputies of Imam, they are eligible to interpret the hadith for the day that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
So they can easily actually interpret and give us the laws based on the Islamic values. And so
also, can I add a point to that, though? Now, what you mentioned is that you saying, okay, Islam is a system and needs someone to maintain it.
Yes.
So you're kind of trying to imply the fact that we constantly need an imam or a prophet to maintain it.
Yes.
Now, with Islam, there are two sides to it. Now, there is the government side where you have, you know, Allah appoints the ma'sumeen or the infallibles or the governors of the system. But the system itself, it was made very clear to the followers of that system that you as a person has what we call wajibat, right? You have got compulsory actions that you need to abide by whether you have someone governing or not. So, for example, now, whether the imam is present or not, whether even the deputies are present or not, as a Muslim, I have certain things. For example, you know, if you go by the Ten Commandments, thou I shall not kill, right? Thou shall not steal. These are set laws. I don't need an imam. I don't need someone to be in government to tell me this is my obligation. Okay. So Islam says you have certain obligations.
Okay.
Now, with other things, you might need to, you know, things to be explained to you and stuff like that. But the main things that when it comes to the rights of people, dealing with other people, they're already set, predefined. Everyone knows them, whether they it is an imam or not. So Islam itself, so you can say it's self-maintained when it comes to the person himself. So now I know my duties.
Yeah.
Now sometimes, we can say when it comes to matters of new affairs and things like that and how I should deal with them in terms of halal haram, maybe I have to refer to a marja, I have to refer to an imam.
Okay.
But the basics themselves, they are set.
So then
so for example, if we do a comparison between Islam and the secular system or the countries that we have. For example, Islam from the beginning said there is no difference between a black man and a white man.
Yes.
From the beginning.
Yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala eliminate that kind of level between people.
Yes.
Now we still have that problem in the West, for example, black people and white people until today, the 21st century.
Yes.
So as a Muslim, if I go back 1,000 years ago, my values are set in this kind of regard. So we don't constantly need that kind of government.
That's right.
Yes, it, as part of Islam needs that kind of government. But initially saying that as a person, me and you, our duties are set and clear.
Yeah.
Only for the new problems on Masa'il al-Mustaqbal.
Exactly. So but Muslim, he knows that he should not kill, he should not take the rights of others, he should not steal. These are set.
But you see, we have so many problems in the Muslim lands because there are so many interpretations out of a same fixed value system among different schools of thought. You know, the problem is here that in the West, the secular system, as we call it, democracy or the republic, the system of the law is replaced with the religious one, so the separated church and the state, okay? And that's the law that is ruling over the country. In the Muslim lands, in the Islamic schools of thought, now we have different interpretations out of the same system of the value. And still, the people are not ruling over the people. I mean, people from the same classes. Still, there is a government because, politically speaking, the system of the government and these political different political positions are coming from the Western political sciences. Mm. And then we want to annex or cling a kind of Islamic value system to that so they do not come together. Still, the people are now ruling over the people, as you see in the Persian Gulf. You know, in the Arab countries, there's still the aristocratic king system over there, ruling over the people, okay, in the Muslim lands. In Islamic Republic of Iran, we have this republic that everybody's vote is counted, okay? It's not like representative elect in the U.S. or something like that. The elites of the society decide for the people. But still, we have the problem of how to interpret this value system as close as possible to the pure Muhammadan Islam.
I think, I'm not sure if the brother agrees. I think you're mixing so many things together, with all due respect.
Yes.
You're putting so many things together, and then I think you're drifting out of the topic altogether. Now, when it comes to interpreting certain laws and certain values yes. by Muslims, that's a topic by itself.
Okay.
Defining government and what a government
should
be.
As you said, Brother Abdullah.
That's a different topic.
Brother Sayyid Abdullah, as you said, Islam is self-sufficient.
Yeah.
This
is what I'm saying to you. Okay, this is what I'm trying to say to you. Is like, as a Muslim now, the main theme of Islam, the main lifestyle that is set, that is not something that me and you disagree on. For example, the brother has said in the Quran, whoever kills one soul, as if he killed entire humanity.
Yes.
That's not subject to interpretation. Everyone knows it. I should not kill.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to interpretation, people say, well, okay, the Quran says kill those who are non-Muslims, for example.
Yes.
And they interpret that in their own sense and they go blow themselves up.
The takfir ones.
Okay,
that's
takfir
right.
ones. Yes. Now, these guys, okay, they might have went through away from the formula, but the formula itself is set. Mm-hmm. Now, these people who misinterpret, they're only misinterpreting for their own agenda,
yes.
not because there's a problem in the system itself to begin with.
Okay.
Now, I can misinterpret the Quran or the Hadith in any way I like to suit me.
Yes.
Not that there's something wrong with it. So the majority of the Muslims, they agree killing a person is wrong.
Yes.
Now, Daesh, no matter how, like 10,000, 15,000, 100,000 of them, compared to 1.6 billion, is nothing. So I can't disagree with the majority and take the minority. So even with being misinterpretation, I'm going to overlook it. But the theme itself is there.
Yeah, a brief comment on the Sayyid's explanation. A brief comment, I think. We have to go one step before your question.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean? Look, we are defining the principles and fundamentals in Islam. But we are not talking about masadiq, or examples which are actually practical in Islam world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care, for example, in that Arab country, for example, due to hierarchy or due to their dynasty, the rule of that country has been actually given to a person, right?
Okay.
So what I'm saying what Islam says. Islam.
No, I mean, brother.
And Islam defined, mind you, brother, cut short. Islam defined what a ruler should be. And he gave the characteristics and the virtues of a ruler.
Yeah.
Now, if the people choose a wrong ruler, or a ruler comes by power, now, me and you as Muslim, we are powerless to do anything about it. Especially if these systems are supported by the West themselves.
Yeah. If he inherited, for example, from his dynasty, a kind of government, so it is not going to be necessarily a model Islamic model. Islam has its own principle, and it has not changed from 14th century ago, and it has been defined by the Prophet and explained by the Imams.
So, in this school, we are talking about you talked about the Masadiq, I mean these examples. Now, if in a Muslim land, which is ruled by an Islamic system of value, if there comes a problem about the rights of the people, what is the problem? Where is the problem coming from?
You're
claiming to have rule the country by a system of values which is rooted in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Is it so?
Yeah.
So in comparison to the Western world, which have so many problems, I believe that. But as long as you are comparing yourself with them, and then you as a Muslim land have many problems.
We're not comparing
some people say upon this conspiracy theory, these are all, you know, the plots against the Muslim lands. You know, the system of the governance coming from over there into the Muslim lands mixed with some Islamic themes and the concepts and then rule over the people. But still, so many Muslim lands nowadays have crisis Where do these problems come from,
yeah,
brother?
Actually, we're not, first of all, we are not actually comparing Islam to any other school because it has al-Islam ya'lu wa la ya'la. Islam, this is not good. Sorry, delete it. Islam is high, and we're not comparing Islam to any other school. And but rationally speaking, we are saying that, look, this is the formula that Islam has given us for the, let's say, system of government.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is not being observed in this country or in the other, so lots of problems will arise. So the same way that they have selected their own government, they have to go and solve their problems.
So another way, you're saying, do not blame this Islamic system. Blame those who apply it. So there's
this
a problem
point.
In
yes.
applying it, not in the system itself. So me as a ruler, I know that my Islamic duties, but I decide to be a corrupt person and take the rights of other peoples. Now, someone from the outside, they can't come and blame Islam because I'm in a Muslim country, I'm a Muslim person, and say, okay, here's your ruler, here's Islam, you guys doing it wrong. Well, I am doing it wrong, not Islam.
Yeah,
I know. Even now in the West, when they point fingers at Islam, they measuring Islam by the people. You can't do that. You know how Imam Ali says,
the wrong practitioners,
he says,
the
truth,
I know,
you know the people of the truth.
Yeah.
Not vice versa. So now people say, well, okay, look at the Muslim countries. Well, I don't care about the Muslim countries. I don't care who rules the Muslim countries.
Yes.
They do not represent Islam.
Okay, that's right. Thank you very much for today's discussion. It was really nice. Sayyid Abdullah Musa and Brother Ali, we are out of time for today's discussion.
Thanks.
We have to cut it over here. Thank you very much. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this program. This is Weir Points. I'm Atta, the host of this program. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Color of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel, Instagram page, Color of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Afi Amanullah.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
the limelight.
The Zionist regime is abusing UNRWA employees detained in Gaza in order to extract forced confessions against the agency, with detainees describing being subjected to acts of torture. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, UNRWA staff observed signs of trauma and ill treatment, including dog bite wounds, among the released detainees upon their arrival to Karam Abu Salem checkpoint on the Gaza-Israel boundary. Many were transferred to hospitals in Gaza due to injury or illness. Released detainees said they were forced to sit on their knees for hours on end while blindfolded and their hands tied. They described ill treatment, including physical beatings, threats of physical harm, insults, and humiliation, such as being made to act like animals or getting urinated on, use of loud music and noise. Detainees were also deprived of food, water, sleep, and toilets, and prevented from praying. Tightly locked handcuffs caused open wounds and friction injuries, according to UNRWA. While detainees had their ribs broken and shoulders dislocated as a result of beating with metal bars, rifle butts, and boots. Men and boys who were sheltering at an UNRWA installation were forced to strip naked and remained naked during their detention. Men and women were subjected to sexual violence and harassment, threats of rape, and were forced to strip in front of the Israeli troops and photographed and filmed while naked. A 41-year-old man who was detained told UNRWA that detainees were subjected to electrical shocks through their body parts, causing another man he was detained to get sick and die. A woman who was detained said that an Israeli intelligence officer displayed her neighborhood on a computer screen and asked them about individuals residing there. The woman told UNRWA, she said, "If you don't confess with all the information, we will bomb your home and kill your family." The Palestinian Prisoners Club says that the Zionist regime refuses to disclose information on the number of people from Gaza it has detained over the past 6 months or on where they are being held, Reuters reported. Al-Mizan, a Palestinian human rights group based in Gaza, says that Israeli regime forces have detained at least 3,000 people in the territory who are subjected to multiple forms of cruelty, torture, inhuman and degrading treatment from the moment they are arrested. Their detention and interrogation occurs without any judicial oversight or legal protection, in blatant defiance of international humanitarian law and international human rights law, the rights group adds. Around 1,650 Palestinians from Gaza are being imprisoned by the Zionist regime under its unlawful combatants law in total isolation and denied the right to a lawyer or legal representation. Detainees held under this law are neither granted the status of prisoners of war under the Third Geneva Convention nor afforded the protections of civilian detainees under the Fourth Geneva Convention, according to Al-Mizan. A lawyer with the rights group recently visited Ascalon and Ofer prisons, where some 300 Palestinians from Gaza not held under the unlawful combatants law are being abducted, pending investigation. Al-Mizan's lawyer met with approximately 40 detainees who provided harrowing accounts of torture and inhumane treatment, including sleep deprivation and starvation as a form of torture and collective punishment. A 19-year-old told the rights group that three of his fingernails were removed during interrogation, that a dog was unleashed on him, and he was placed in a stress position for prolonged periods during 3 days of interrogation. Al-Mizan's lawyer reported that all detainees suffer from acute emaciation, fatigue, and back curvature due to being forced to bend their backs and heads while walking. The rights group said many were unable to recall the names of people present in the room due to the physical and psychological abuse. According to Al-Mizan's lawyer, in his more than 20 years of working with detainees, he had never encountered conditions as appalling as those observed at Ofer Prison. The rights group said that the serious harm caused to Palestinians from Gaza in Israeli detention situates it within the legal framework of the crime of genocide. Al-Mizan added that the Zionist regime's use of systematic and widespread torture constitute crimes against humanity and called on the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court to issue arrest warrants.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel steps up its deadly strikes on the besieged Gaza Strip as regime genocidal onslaught against the territory enters its 200th day. Head of UNRWA calls for a Security Council probe into Israel's complete disregard for UN premises in Gaza after 180 of the agency's staffers are killed. And U.S. police arrest over 130 pro-Palestine students at New York University as a spate of anti-Israeli protests sweeps through major American campuses. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. Over 200 days now into the U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide in Gaza, and the regime continues its attacks all across the devastated territory, killing more innocent civilians. In central Gaza,
Israeli airstrikes and artillery fire continue pounding the Al Burej and Nusayrat refugee camps. Several citizens were killed and a number of others injured as a result. And to the north, regime's attacks targeted Beit Lahia Stadium, killing and wounding several displaced Palestinians that had sought shelter there. Elsewhere, fresh shelling hit east of the southern city of Khan Yunis. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor has warned Israel is wiping out Beit Lahia to initiate another wave of mass displacement. Group has called for immediate international action to